I'm pulling away from the curb because I had to do a chore.
We all know what that means. It's time for my drive to work. Okay, so today my topic is writing preview articles. I'm going to talk all about my history of writing preview articles and how I write them and what's important and everything you ever wanted to know in 30 minutes about writing preview articles. Okay, so I'm going to start with a little bit of history. So prior to my working at Wizards, I used to write for television, but I'm a writer. So when I first got involved with Wizards of the Coast, with Magic, I wrote for the Duelist magazine. Once upon a time, Wizards produced a magazine about Magic. The very, very first thing I did were the Magic puzzles. But shortly thereafter, I flew myself to Gen Con of 1994, which is where the very first World Championship for Magic happened. And I went there to pitch. So the editor-in-chief was a woman named Catherine Haynes, and I wanted to write articles for Magic. I was doing the puzzle column. So basically, I met up with her at the event, and I said I'd like to write articles. And she's like, okay, well, pitch me good ideas. If you give me a good idea, I'll let you write it. And so I started writing articles. In fact, I pitched her two ideas at that very show, one of which was an article about Magic at Gen Con, with the lovely name of an MTGer at Gen Con. The term MTGer didn't really catch on. And then the other thing is I covered the World Championship. So if you've ever seen the final table, you know, the final match at the very first ever World Championship, there's a young man wearing an Underdog shirt taking notes. That is me. I'm in that picture. But anyway, so I was writing the article for The Duelist. I wrote the article on the World Championship. Anyway, I would go on to write lots and lots of articles. As it turned out, A, I knew how to write. B, I knew Magic. And C, I turned my things in on time. So I was very involved. In fact, the very first thing I was involved in on Magic was The Duelist. So much so that when I got hired to Wizards, The Duelist actually fought to hire me. There were three different sections. R&D, the Magic brand team, and Duelist were all interested in hiring me. What we ended up doing was I was working in R&D on Magic, and then I was the liaison to The Duelist. And then eventually I became the editor-in-chief of The Duelist. But anyway, I was very connected to The Duelist. I like writing. And so if you ever heard, I did a podcast when I got accepted into the Hall of Fame talking about my very early beginnings of Magic. And what I explained was, or not Magic, beginning of game design. When I was a game designer, this is before Magic even came out, I was an amateur game designer. I wanted to be a game designer. And I really wanted to find information about how to be a game designer. And the problem I ran into was there was just so little written about game design. Very, very little. So much so that when I sort of came to Wizards, I wanted to be the force you want to see in the world. I really wanted more information on game design. I knew I desperately wanted it. So I said, okay, I'm going to produce that. And so once I got to Wizards, I was very active in trying to write about the process of making Magic. I started writing a column called Insider Trading, where I sort of gave a behind-the-scenes look at making Magic. And then I did my first teaser in Insider Trading for Mirage. It's a 12-12 trampler for one mana. And then Tempest was the first set that I led. So, real quickly, I've talked about this before on other podcasts, but just for context, I was hired not as a designer, but as a developer, but I wanted to be a designer. While working away, but I took the job because I'm like, okay, I'll get my foot in the door. And then I realized there was an opportunity. We were bringing design in-house as of Tempest, and Richard Garfield had mentioned to me that he was interested in working on a Magic set. So I took that and I went to Joel Mick, who was the head designer at the time, and I said, hey, I would like to lead the design for Tempest. And Richard Garfield said he'd be on my team. And that was enough for Joel to go, fine. I ended up putting Mike Elliott on my team, who he and I had talked a lot about wanting to design. He and I were the same thing. We were hired as developers, but we wanted to be designers. And then Charlie Catino rounded out the team. Anyway, when it was time for Tempest to come out, I wrote an article all about it. A behind-the-scenes article. Then in two... So anyway, I while the duelist existed, I both wrote a lot of articles behind the scenes and convinced other people to write articles about behind the scenes. I thought that was really important. And then in 2002, I was tasked with starting the Magic website, of having content on the website. So we had originally an article every day, eventually went up to two articles every day. Making Magic, my article, started back in January of 2002. It is the only article still standing. Little by little, we stopped doing a lot of regular articles. I continue to do mine. It was popular, and I like writing about magic. And I firmly believe that an important part of what I do is communicating to the audience. And I believe sharing with all of you how we make magic makes you appreciate it more and makes you notice things. And, you know, like I just think us being open about design is good, not just for amateur game designers, but just for the average magic player, so you can learn things about magic. I like to think that I set the standard. Nowadays, there's only, back when I first started writing, everybody was like very quiet because like, oh, you're giving away trade secrets, you know. I somehow started doing it, no one stopped me, and by the time someone thought to stop me, it becomes such a standard of what magic did that, like, well, it doesn't seem to hurt anything. But a lot of other writers started coming out, you know, like, nowadays there's a lot more writing about the process. I like to believe I was a contributor to that. Anyway, part of Making Magic, my article on the website, was that I write preview articles. That's what today's topic is. So the idea of a preview article is, hey, there's a new set coming out. We want to let you know about it. A, because we want you to be interested and we want to excite you and make you, ooh, that sounds cool. I want to buy it. I mean, we're trying to drum up excitement. But also, I, in my quest to sort of have people better understand, it's the time period where I sort of explain how the set get made. So really, when I do a preview column, there are three things that I do. Number one, I introduce the design team or design teams. Number two, I often show a preview card or cards. And number three, I tell the design story. Those are the three things I do in a preview column. Usually my preview columns are at least two articles long. Sometimes they're longer, they can be three. On occasion they've been shorter, they can be one. Often Universe Beyond articles are one and not two, just because anything we write that has to do with the partner, it has to go, we have to send it out to the partner and they have to review it. It just, so we limit about how many articles we write about other properties, just because there's a lot more we have to go through to get the okay to do them. But for magic, you know, for in-universe, in-multiverse magic articles, normally I write at least two articles. The other difference between Universes Beyond and magic in-universe stuff is I am on all the design teams for all the in-universe magic sets. I'm on some of the design teams for Universes Beyond. Occasionally I lead, I led a Marvel set, for example. I was on, the very first booster release we did with Lord of the Rings, so I was on Lord of the Rings. I didn't lead it, but I was on Lord of the Rings. So anyway, from time to time, I'm on Universes Beyond sets. So sometimes I can speak from firsthand, but most of the time I'm not. Just we make a lot of magic. So when we do those, I have to interview the lead that made them so that I can tell the story. But when I'm there, when I lived through the story, it's a little easier. And I can write more about it because I was there. I just have more content to write about. Okay, so let's start with introducing the teams. So something, there is a way we do post our credits online. But as someone who's had to try to find the credits, it's hard to find. They're not easy to get to. They exist, but they're not easy to get to. So if someone wants to know who led a certain design, it's not easy to know. So I made it an effort from the very beginning that when I write a preview article, I introduce the design team. Now, originally, I would just introduce the design team, and then there was a development column, and the development column introduced the development team. Then, when that went away, I started introducing both the exploratory design team, the vision design team, the set design team. Play design is not, there's not an allocated team, more of like all play design tends to work on it, so there's not a dedicated team for each set. And then I started recently writing about the commander design team. The reason I write about this is I think it's important that you know who's making the game. You know, like I'm a big believer in giving credit and letting people know who it is. And I think part of that is also hey, learning about designers you like, and oh, so-and-so let this said, and stuff like that. Now, I used to write all the bios myself. The problem I would run into is they just sounded very samey because it was always me writing them. So what I started doing a couple years ago is I had the lead of the set write about it. I think I started doing that when I started doing set design credits, or around there. For example, set design I'm not on, so it's very hard for me to write. Like, sometimes I would have to write bios for people that I didn't even know, I hadn't worked with, like, you know. So the nice thing about the set lead writing it is they can talk, A, it's different people, so you get different vantage points, so it's not the same thing every time about the same person, and they can really get into deep about what that particular set was about, right? Here's what this person did on this set. You know, they helped with this mechanic. So they can get really into the specifics of what happened. And the other thing that a lot of people have had fun when they write the credits, write the bios, is that they can put themes into it. So Mark Gottlieb, for example, did the Murders at Cuddlove Manor, and he put a puzzle into it. There was a logic puzzle woven into the bios. When Annie did the bios for Duskmorn, she asked everybody to list up their greatest magic fear, your greatest fear that had to do with magic. So we can, you know, people have fun sort of theming them. But anyway, oh, and another big thing is, it's a big deal internally. You know, it's nice when you work on something to get credit for people to see that you did it. And like I said, it's not easy to find our credit. So really, the high profile thing we do where people, outside people learn who did something is the credits in my articles. And those are a pretty big deal. Like, most of the people who work in R&D now grew up reading my articles and seeing other designers in bios. And so the idea to become a bio is a big thing. So anyway, that's why I continue that. I do something where we have one of the tools in design where you can hide text. So basically the way I do it is I introduce the team and you have to click it to see the team. So I always say, if you want to meet the team, click here. You have to click the button, click here, and it'll reveal all the text. But it's a lot of text, and like we make it opt-in. But hopefully you take out and check out who the designers are. Getting a sense from set to set who the designers are really will help you get some bigger pictures of how things are made. Okay, the second thing I need to do is a preview card. The way the preview cards work is, Blake Rasmussen, who oversees the preview process, he's in charge of assigning cards to everybody. There are some internal things, but the majority of them are actually external. We work with a lot of different content creators, and that the reason a preview card is a big deal is it is a huge driver for traffic. For example, we can look at our articles, and we can see how many people read an article, and when there is a preview card in it, it shoots up. People like magic cards. People like cards they've never seen before. It's just fun content. And so having preview cards just draws people in. I also tend to use it in my article as a means, if I want to explain something, sometimes showing you the card helps me then make a point of it. Like, I'm talking about a new mechanic. Well, let me show you the new mechanic, and then I can sort of explain it. So I usually put the preview card somewhere in. That's also hidden behind the click. Once again, I'll say, to meet this card, to see this card, click here. You click here and you'll see it. The way the process works is Blake always talks to me early and says, what card do you want? Every once in a while, there's a very particular card I need. But usually what I say to Blake is, oh, here's my theme. So I'm going to use Duskmorn for my examples for this just because it's a recent set. And Foundations is not sort of your average set. So I'm going to use Duskmorn as my example. So he said to me, okay, what do you want? I'm like, well, I know the very first article is going to be about enchantment theme, and rooms are a big part of that. So, and rooms are the big splashy new thing. I'd like to show a room. So he ended up giving me two rooms. I think I had an uncommon and a mythic rare, I believe. But anyway, I get anywhere between one and three preview cards. I think once I got four, but anyway, and I can show off the preview cards and talk about them. And it's a driver. I mean, most people come to my article because they wanted the preview articles, but it helps, you know. And it also, sometimes when people hear about it, they'll come, you know, anyway, it's a good driver to what we do. And it does a good job of showing off what the new set is in a fun, exciting way. Okay, the main thrust, though, of the articles is telling the design story. So normally when I want to tell the design story, there's three main things I care about. I want to talk about what was the goal of the set. Number two is, what is the theme of the set? And number three, what are the mechanics of the set? And the other important thing, and this is true about any writing, but especially for the preview column, I want, my goal of writing a column is to be entertaining, right? I want people to enjoy reading it. And so one of the ways to do that is I want to tell a story. And so articles are just easier, like, if you give a narrative component to it, like, it's not just, here's random facts. It's like, I'm going to tell you a story. This is more compelling. And so normally where I start is I start with, what were the goals of the set? So for example, usually when we green light a set, which means we have what's called an arc planning team. The arc planning team usually puts together 2 to 3 years worth of sets. We then have to run it by upper management. We officially get the thumbs up from them. Normally what arc planning does, we get the thumbs up. It's not like they often reject, but they'll give notes sometimes. Maybe we move around things. But anyway, once we officially get greenlit, there's, like, for example, with Duskmourn, the two things that we sort of decided on the set when we greenlit it, one was it was going to be inspired by modern horror, influenced specifically by media of the 70s and 80s, and we loved the idea of a haunted house that had absorbed the whole plane. Like, this creepy haunted house that just, it goes on forever. Those were the two ideas. So when we started design, we're like, okay, those are the two things we're doing. Trying to make modern horror had some trickiness. The biggest thing about it was, Magic, when it started, did a lot of what we call high fantasy. A lot of, think of like Tolkien or Dungeons and Dragons or, you know, Greek mythology. There's a certain sort of era of high mythology, just the way it looks, that it tends to be medieval and sort of technology, and there's just a certain look and feel to it. There's castles and kings and dragons, and but that is not the only way to do fantasy, and one of the things Magic, I think, has been very good at over the years is expanding how we can do fantasy, and it's not just Magic. Other mediums have expanded as well, but we really like pushing boundaries. We had done Kamigawa Neon Dynasty. We had a lot of modern influences, could be influenced by Japanese pop culture. And so the set had a very modern element. I mean, it had a traditional element too, but a very modern element. And people really liked the set. So we're like, okay, let's keep pushing boundaries and seeing what we can do. So we liked the idea of, okay, we had done horror before. Innistrad was gothic horror. New Phyrexia was what I call sort of alien horror. We wanted to do horror, but like as we're doing more Magic sets, we're slicing our genres a little thinner. Like once upon a time, it's like, it's all about horror. But now it's sort of like, well, okay, this is gothic horror. Then we did some cosmic horror. This is alien horror. Okay, we're doing sort of a modern horror. And modern horror has a different sensibility to it. And so our goal was, how do we mechanically make the set feel like modern horror? That was our goal. And so my article is, that's the story I'm trying to tell. We start with the goal. We're doing modern horror. We're doing Endless House. And so what I need to do is I want to build the story. So now I have to write two articles. Normally the way I do it is I like the two articles to feel connected, meaning the story feels connected. But I usually like each article to have its own theme so that if you start and finish the article, I do true two-parters sometimes where it's like, cliffhanger, come read next week. I do, but I also want the articles to be as self-contained as possible in the sense that I want when you finish the article, you feel like, okay, it wrapped up at a logical point. Not that there's not more to tell, but it wrapped up and I learned something. So, for example, for Duskmourn, now we get into theme. I like to talk about the theme of the set. And usually there's a cohesive theme, a connective theme. And for Duskmourn, it was the modern horror thing. And so a lot of what I was trying to do was figure out, okay, the team was trying to figure out how do we do that. We early on exploratory design, we recognized the idea that modern horror has this component of mood and tone that a lot of times, like one of the things, so gothic horror first got founded in books, right? And so, and it was based on the fears, like horror has always been a genre built around fear. It is taking people's fears and bringing them to life so that people can sort of interact with them, right? That's something that people can really, you know, understand this idea that, you know, that facing your fears is a pretty human experience. But gothic horror, we're talking Dracula and Frankenstein, like, it was fears of when those were created, which was a very different time. And modern horror is more about more modern fears. It's a lot more psychological. And the fears that get brought to life are just different kinds of fears. A lot of early gothic horror was about you becoming a monster. You know, what will I do? And do I do the wrong thing and I become the monster? That's a lot of gothic horror. Modern horror is much more about, like, facing the fears that you know, well, am I doing things that are causing destruction? Like, you facing your individual, like, facing the fears as more tangible things. It's a little less metaphorical and more, you know, I'm facing my literal fears. Anyway, once we understood mood and tone, we got to the idea that enchantment. So my first article was the theme of enchantments. Kind of the way I looked at it was, I'm going to talk about the vision design, but mostly I'm going to talk about how vision design really led for us to make the enchantment theme work. And I talked about how, in order for enchantment theme to work, you need to have a lot of enchantments and you need to care about enchantments. So I talked about eerie, but the big thing was I talked about rooms. And one of the things that I'm always looking for when I'm writing my preview articles is, what is the most dynamic story? What is the coolest thing? And I knew that the exploration of rooms was a really fun story. We did a lot of crazy things. We had a separate deck, like attractions and contraptions. We had a little meeple that you moved around. We had multiple rooms represented on one card. We tried all sorts of different things. And we have what we call the gates, gate 0 through gate 11 now, I think, where there are check-ins by the rest of the company to make sure things are going on. If you're the lead of a set, you'd normally do some of the gate check-ins. Annie had made some presentations for some of those gates that she had that included images. So not only did we try things, we had images. So an important thing is articles are first and foremost words, but they're also pictures. And whenever you can find good visuals, visuals really add to an article. So when I'm telling a preview article, I'm always on the lookout for what visuals. For example, I will always make sure I know what cards I can show. I try to show as much cards as I can. In fact, to write a preview article, my editor, Adam, will always get me a list of all the cards that are public at the time my article's coming out. Because obviously I don't want to give away cards that aren't public at the time of my article, but there's mechanical articles and there's early previews and there's things that would allow me the opportunity to show you cards without giving anything away, but helps make my point. I'm also looking for other visuals. In the case of Duskmourn, I had a gold mine. Like, not only was the story of the creation of rooms really cool, but we tried a lot of very weird things, and Annie had graphics of it. You know, Annie had examples of what we had done. And so anyway, that was really compelling, so I made sure to include that. And the other big thing that I like to do is I want to walk you through the different steps of what we've done. Like, one of the real fun parts of behind the scenes is, hey, we didn't start, whatever we ended with, normally we didn't start with that. I mean, every once in a while we get lucky. But usually we go, like, mechanics go through change. We make it, we play with it, we adapt it, you know, the iterative process. And so it's fun to sort of walk through different ideas. Because early on, usually when you're trying something for the first time, look, you don't know. It's something that you're unfamiliar with, and so you're trying things. But then as you play test it, you learn from it. And from learning from it, you know, it changes for the better. So I like showing, like, for example, I talked about the eerie mechanic, right? Well, I knew that the eerie mechanic was not what we had turned over. We had turned over a mechanic called Afraid. Now, both Afraid and Eerie do the same role of caring about enchantments getting played. But the fine-tune, like, we had made Constellation in Theros. Theros was also about enchantments. And we wanted kind of a riff on Constellation. A, the word Constellation wasn't great. And B, we wanted to incorporate more elements of it. So it's fun that in the article I can show you, well, here's what we handed off, and here's what we were thinking, and here's what Afraid is. But here's why we changed it and talked about what the changes were. Normally, by the way, when I... the first week is usually more focused on vision design. It's when I introduce the exploratory design teams and the vision design teams. The second set is more about set design. It's when I introduce the set design teams and the commander design teams. But the first week, for example, was more about enchantment. So I did talk about the elements of enchantments and then finish following through on them. I'll introduce Afraid, but then I'll get to Eerie, because Eerie's about enchantment. So I do want to have a larger theme. And yes, I'm telling a bigger story, and like I said, it's somewhat chronological, so normally vision comes first and then set design. But it depends on what I'm telling. And the big thing, and sort of my point today of preview columns, is there is an art to writing a good preview column. You know, A, I want to make sure that you know what's coming. I want you excited. So I want to be informative. I want to make sure you know, okay, what are all the new mechanics? But I also want to give you context for that. I want to explain why. Why did we do it this way? Why is that important? How do different things maybe interact with one another? You know, I want to make you understand sort of a larger thing of what we're doing, because once you can see the big picture, you know, it's more exciting for you and something that you get you invested in. So a lot of the preview column is sort of whetting the appetite for the audience and informing the audience. But there are some secondary goals. Another one is I want to entertain you. Look, I'm a writer. The average article is 3,000 words, or at least my minimum is 3,000 words. Normally, I try not to go over 4,000. I usually have to talk to my editor if I go over 4,000, because added words have meaning down the stream, and I don't want to make extra work for people. But anyway, my article on average is 3,000 words. I want people to enjoy it. I want people, you know, I need my articles to be entertaining as much as being informative. And so that is what I'm talking about is figuring out what I'm going to tell, what am I going to explain, but then I want to figure out the story. What's the cool story? With the example of Duskmorn, I knew I had a really cool story. I had two cool stories. One was sort of the quest for rooms and enchantments as a larger theme. And the second story was Vision Design had been very cautious about not stepping on the toes of the other horror sets, especially Innistrad. And Set Design decided to make some, we avoided the graveyard. Set Design decided, no, we need to do the graveyard. So, they added some stuff back in that we purposely avoided. But that's an interesting story. Why didn't we do it? Why did they add it? That's the kind of thing people want to read, which is, why did you add something? Why did you take something away? Why did you tweak it? Why did you change it? And the key for all the preview columns is I want to make sure that each column itself has a through line and it has something fun for people to read. Normally, I like finishing, if I do a two-parter, then my first part leads you into the second part, does what we call a throw-forward. Every once in a while, I'll do what we call a cliffhanger. What a cliffhanger means is, dramatic moment, what's going to happen? Tune in next week. I don't do a lot of actual cliffhangers. When one presents itself, I'll do them every once in a while. Normally, I like the articles to sort of be self-contained. Not that it ends the story. There's more story next week. But at least it wraps it up. The first article at Duskmorn really talks about the journey of enchantments and how we brought the enchantment theme to life. And then the second article is more about, okay, there's things beyond enchantments. What are those other elements? And then the main through line of the second article was how the set sort of changed in set design, because the set definitely had some differences. Things were added and stuff like that. And the key to a preview article is not every preview article is the same, because not every design is the same. Sometimes the design goes through a lot of, different things can happen. And my job as the guy writing the preview article is, what's the through line? What's the story? Now, the good news is, my background's writing, and finding the story, finding the good beat is something I'm good at. So I try whenever possible in the preview articles. I want you to sort of, I want to show evolution, I want to show what happened, but I also want to make something compelling. And it's also neat to sort of explain why something didn't work or why we made a change. I try to do that as much as we can. But anyway, that, my friends, is the core of telling a good preview article. Introduce the team, show off some cards, walk through the story. The story, once again, is making sure you explain what your goals are, explaining what your themes are and how you brought those to life, explaining what your mechanics are and how those came to be. And then the idea at the end of my article is, I don't get too much into the minute details. I'm talking bigger picture. I'm talking about what the mechanics are. I'm talking about the set as a whole, because preview is sort of whet your appetite. And then later on in other articles, sometimes I'll do like card by card where I go really in deep in how one card got made or something. Or sometimes I'll talk about a mechanic if there's a much larger story. But anyway, guys, that, my friends, is how you write a preview article. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. But I'm now at work. So we all know what that means. This is the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to be making magic. I'll see you guys next time. Bye-bye.